emergency. This is Kyle speaking. How may I help you? Hello?
Something just ran in front of us down the road.
Okay, the state police should be on their way in a few minutes.
I don't know what the hell it was, but it was big. It looked like a great big dog.
Is it a bear, maybe?
Maybe, I don't know.
Sir? Hello?
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man. Seen many times in the rugged mountains and deep woods of the Pacific Northwest. The encounters have not always been peaceful.
In our modern world of concrete and steel, we're far removed from the Indian lore of Bigfoot. It's hard to imagine any corner of our crowded world where a giant, man-like creature could roam free. Yet there's persuasive evidence that Bigfoot is real. If we assume that Bigfoot is real and that men are closing in on this seemingly gentle monster, then we must prepare for that first meeting. To have eluded us for so long, Bigfoot must understand men very well. The burden will be on us to understand him. Bigfoot may well be waiting for some sign that we're ready.
Hey, PK.
Hey, Mojo. How you doing?
Hey, we're good. John's trying to figure out what his phone number is. He's looking at his phone because he doesn't know.
You know what? I almost texted you and said, he doesn't know his own number, does he? I just had a feeling.
Yeah, he totally had a feeling.
Like 10 minutes ago, I almost said that.
Yeah, he's trying to figure it out. It's got to be under your phone. I'll get it in a second here.
You know you can look on your phone and find it, right?
Well, I never call his cell phone.
But it's got to be in your phone. Hold on. Well, let me put you on hold, and I'm going to get him on.
Okay.
Mojo?
Yeah.
John?
Yeah.
Hey, it worked.
Well, there's a little bit of delay. He says, yeah, in my ear, and half a second later, I hear it in the phone. He probably would have spread out a little bit.
Yeah, you guys are going to have to go on different sides of camp.
Okay. Good.
So
you can ask us questions and see if we're both telling the truth.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can't corroborate or give each other sign language.
That's right.
So how's it going out there?
It's going pretty good. We got out here today and came in and started testing the R2-D2 camera system, and we had some issues with it not rotating straight off center, and it was driving us crazy, so we tore it apart and put it back together again. So now it's working really good. So we decided normally the way we operate it is we turn the thermal on, and the thermal stays on, and periodically through the night I sweep around camp and, you know, just see what's out there, see what's moving, and I don't turn the IR camera on unless I see something.
Right.
Well, when I finally go to bed or whatever, I leave the thermal on. I usually leave it either pointing at the road or a place that I'd want to record all night. So the problem with that is when, after the last trip, I got home and I had freaking 24 hours of video to look at because it just records. So then Dean reminded me that my DVR has a motion activated recording feature, which, duh, I should have remembered that. So now we're going to test, make sure motion activated recording works. That way, in the middle of the night, it's not going to record unless something moves in
but
the picture. So we're going to test that out tonight.
Isn't that going to be IR? Won't the motion sensor be infrared?
No, it's basically the motion sensor is inside the DVR, when it senses something on the picture that moves, on a video input that moves, whether it's thermal or IR or just basic daytime, you know. So anything that moves inside the video feed, it'll activate the DVR to start recording. So, yeah, we're going to test that out. That way the next day we can actually review it and not have to look at, when I wake up in the middle of the night like I always do, and I spend some time, you know, panning around camp, that'll automatically activate the motion option on it, on the DVR, and it'll start recording. So, and I'll know if it's recording because it'll have a little indicator that says it's recording. So this will be the second time we've used the R2-D2 and see if we can get something on it.
I love that you call it that. That's awesome.
I think John thought that up.
You should totally paint it to look like R2-D2.
Well, we wanted the black so it's like at night, it's like covert, because it does rotate. So, you know, if it's black and it's moving, it's not as noticeable, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You probably don't want to have a blue and white painted Star Wars looking thing on top of your stuff.
But it would look cool, though.
It would look amazing. It would be awesome.
We need wraparound graphics we can put on there for when we're showing off.
Yeah, exactly. You can take them off, like, whenever you're in the woods, but put them on when you're just rolling out.
Yeah, when we're cruising chicks, watching chicks.
Hey, don't knock the squatching chicks.
Oh, no. Women are good luck for squatching.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Who cares?
So, have you guys found or heard or seen anything out there this time around?
Not so far. We heard some distant knocks.
Nothing squatchy, but there's a raven nest not far from our camp, and they've got baby ravens in it, so there's all sorts of bizarre noises coming out of that area. Yeah, so we're sitting in camp, we hear all these weird noises, and we're like, what's that? And we were walking around, we heard some knocking sounds, but they were coming from the same general vicinity of the raven nest, so we're discounting that, too.
Right.
Well, I'm waiting for dark.
Yeah,
still not dark there.
It's starting to get dark. I'll let John tell you, we actually, the prints we cast last outing, John and Rusty had them sitting under the wood stove drying out the mud, and we went ahead and got a wire brush, not a wire brush, but a nylon brush, and cleaned them all off. I'll let John tell you what we found.
Okay. What'd you find?
Well, we were looking at them, and we go, well, these babies are wide for their length, although they're 13 inches long, so they could be in the human realm.
Mm-hmm.
But and what disturbs me is there doesn't seem to be a good big toe on it, but it seems like next two toes made a depression, and of course the way the track line went, it was on the edge of a roadbed, so the right foot was making the good tracks, and the left foot was farther out in the hard-packed road. So we got two right foot prints. And so, of course, they're the same, being the same foot. Neither one shows the big toe. And then we're going, well, you know, he could have a sore toe or something, too, for all we know. But we're wondering about the length to width ratio. So we went online and was looking that up. And it says a Sasquatch track should be about 2.08 times the width to equal the length. And a human track is 2.5 times the width to be the length. And these tracks came out exactly 2.08 times the width to equal the length of 13 inches.
Let me stop you. I have a couple questions about that. First, I want to know where did that information come from?
Mojo might have to help me on that. We were web surfing last night.
There's a guy who has a cast of a purported Bigfoot track, and he was curious about the same thing. So, you know, it looks like a pretty good Bigfoot cast, and he basically cast his own foot and did the math that way, because he says it's widely accepted that Bigfoot's feet are wider in proportion than ours compared to the length. So we needed some type of, reference.
Right.
So we're not saying that's scientific. We just use that as a reference on this guy's video. So it's not by any means gospel, but Bigfoot tracks are generally wider.
Right.
I don't know whose YouTube channel it was, but it made some sense. Our track is pretty wide where the toe pad is, wider than. I just like tell John, it's like, you know, it's just too wide by the toes to be a boot track, you know, because we're thinking, okay, because it looked like it had distinct toes when we cast it, although the big toe wasn't very evident. But I told John, look how wide it is, you know, just below the toes where the pad is. It's much wider than a boot would be.
Where do you measure the width of the foot? If you were to measure the width of my foot, you would start at the base of the toes and go across?
Yeah, kind of that. You've got that wide spot about, well, I'd say it's about 3 inches back of your big toe where your foot is its physically widest point.
Okay.
And it's pretty much the corresponding area in the Bigfoot print. It might be a hair farther back, but they're like really wide.
Yeah.
Widest point.
At its widest point.
Yeah.
Well, its widest point, do you think that varies from human to Bigfoot?
I think, I don't think it'd get any wider. I think past that widest point, I think they just stay wide all the way out.
Right.
I don't know if I stated that clearly, but
you think they're, instead of the pinky toe curving in, that it would go straight out, and so it would equal the distance.
Yeah, there'd be less taper in the forward section of the foot. It would just be, you know, for want of a better term, kind of almost like a box section in the front, and then the taper back towards the heel.
Gotcha. Yeah, I didn't mean to stop that conversation. I just was curious, number one, about where that came from. And
so far. And then it wasn't detailed enough to show any dermal ridges or anything like that. It was very rocky. So there's lots of rocks and stuff in it. And it's like John said, it's basically, it was on the shoulder of a hard packed road where there was a little bit of mud. So we weren't going to get much detail out of it other than it was a shape of a foot that looked like it had some distinct toes. But when we cast it and cleaned it up, it's just, you know, it would have been ideal if it was in sand or just straight mud.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah,
on a rocky, muddy substrate like that, it's just, you just don't get a lot of detail. So it was interesting, but it was the first cast we've actually done. So we're looking forward to doing more. We carry plaster now, so
we're
hoping for a better one.
I'm sure you will get the opportunity. You guys are out there a lot.
Well, as most people know who Squatch, you know, the woods are not an ideal surface to take a print because of the needle, you know, pine needles. You might be standing on 5 feet of needles. It's like walking on a mattress.
Right.
So where you're going to get the prints? Where you're going to get the prints are in the mud or snow, if there's snow, or, you know, on a sandy bank of a river or something. You're not going to get it on the forest floor very often. Sometimes you'll see them, and you're really surprised because it'll take a lot of weight to print like that.
Yep. When you're in the woods, it's hard to even see deer print, and they have, you know, like these sharp toes that actually dig into the ground.
Yeah, we kind of gravitate towards muddy places. I'm standing in a muddy place as I speak to you, and I'm looking at, we've got a raccoon track here, and then some little tiny tracks. I don't know what they are,
Maybe mice.
You know, like a mouse or a, you know, a vole or a shrew or something.
Maybe it's a pine it's marten.
Track. Yeah, perhaps. But, yeah, and then you figure, you know, out of so many acres, how much of it is nice mud that would leave a track? It's like you'd have to, you know, win the lotto, basically, to get a perfect track in the perfect piece of mud.
Yeah, there's also that school of thought. That school of thought that they're aware of their tracks and they try to avoid leaving them.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not, but you know, if you factor that in as well, they're quite rare.
Yeah, I mean that absolutely could be true. They seem smart enough to do all this other stuff, so they would probably be aware of their tracks.
Their own kind.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Do you guys ever think about leaving? Or I don't know how to describe this, but maybe going to a place like at a river bottom and trying to leave apples or something so that they come in, bait them, I guess, so that they have to come in and leave a track.
Well, sort of like the whole Skookum thing where they left the bait in that muddy area and they got that alleged Bigfoot body print.
Right.
We've thought about it. Yeah, a few times. You know, we've never been in the past really big on tracks doing much other than, you know, being a point of interest and being kind of exciting. We're more of the guys that want to get the high definition video or, you know, a picture or something that's, you know, because, you know, I used to say, you know, tracks are a dime a dozen, which implies there's a lot of them and it's not true. But, you know, tracks are good and they're nice, interesting conversation pieces, but there's so few really, really good ones. We never really made that a priority.
Yeah, but they're cool as shit when you find them yourself.
Oh, yeah, they're totally cool, but it's just we try to find a place with activity and then work within the parameters of what we're dealt, you know, in that place. One of our places up by Mount Rainier. We've got a river there, but it's sand and rock, you know, big round river rocks and sand mixed around them. So, I mean, it would be easy enough to walk across it and step on the big round river rocks and not leave a track.
Right.
So
you still may see some impressions, but I doubt you'll have any castable prints.
Right. Rusty and I, last week, followed up on a report we got from a buddy of ours who's a logger, and he was talking to an old-time logger, retired guy now, who found a track line when had rare snow down here, and he followed it for quite a distance until the snow petered out. So we were up in that area, and it's gated off timber company land. You can go in there, but no vehicle access. I mean, we didn't even find any litter in there. We were up in there checking the area out for any signs and did some wood knocking and stuff. So that's kind of how we usually do it, is we go in and try to find out if there's any kind of activity. And then based on that, we'll start zeroing in on an area.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's like anything else. You're going to go deer hunting, you'd go to an area and look for deer sign and then base it on that.
Right. You go scout a little bit before the season starts.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. So, you guys, I'm a complete techie, so I want to know what kind of amazing things you guys have going on in the command van.
Oh, I was going to say inside the command van, you know, I got a solar panel on top that provides all my power to my deep cycle batteries. I got two 6-volt batteries and one 12-volt battery. 12-volt battery is a standalone. I usually charge that before I leave. It's something where I just charge electronics and stuff on. But the solar panel charges my two 6-volt batteries and provides enough power for a week-long outing. You know, I got the 1 terabyte DVR. I could plug up the 4 cameras into it. And I got a regular DVD player for movies and stuff. And then I got a little output panel that I can hook in power or video or audio. I got speakers inside where I can leave an audio outside, like my Zoom H2. On a Zoom, you know what I got? H2? I can't remember. And
yeah,
listen,
H2.
We used to do that a lot. We used to run audio cables into the tree line and on both sides of the van and basically listen to the sound of the forest in stereo. And that got a little old because we get so much rain. The rain kind of drowns everything out, especially if you now there's ways we can try to mitigate the sound of the rain, but normally we haven't done it a lot lately. John usually leaves an audio recorder standalone out somewhere in the designated area just to see what's shaking, but he just records and listens to it afterwards. But live audio recording is kind of cool. Well, we may be able to do that tonight. Last outing, I couldn't find my audio cable, so I couldn't run it outside the van, but yeah, that's another thing we do. So other than that, other than a CB radio, a bunch of handheld walkie-talkies.
You had a GoPro on your hat. You sent me a picture of a GoPro on the bill of your hat. What else do you have for, like, when you're on the trail?
Well, I carry my DSLR camera for still shots and video. And I got the GoPro because, you know, the thing with the GoPro is it's constantly filming. And if you have a split second sighting, you won't have time with handheld. So previous to this, I always wore the GoPro backwards because, you know, they say Bigfoot's gonna have to move until your back's turned, which is very logical. But this time, since we're looking for tracks and everything, I was in the area where we found the ones last one.
Wait, you're breaking up. I don't know what you said.
Oh, let me walk a little closer to camp.
You said that
I'm actually walking down the road.
You're wandering around.
Oh, shame. I started to lose you.
Well,
you're saying when you have it backwards.
Right. When the theory behind backwards filming or reverse filming is if you're walking, hiking through the woods or down a forest road and Bigfoot's in the area, it's not going to make it move until your back's turned. If
right.
it's going to move, it's going to move on your back. They know you're there. I mean, unless you're trying to be real stealthy, but they know you're there. So if they're going to make a move, it's when your back's turned. So they figure that's an ideal time. That's an ideal way to where your GoPro is facing backwards. But then again, what ends up happening is you got hours of footage you have to review because you don't know what's behind you. So I spent a lot of time.
I was just about to ask that. Yeah, hard to do.
It's a wide-angle lens, too. It's a wide-angle lens. Even said it's a wide, narrow, or medium, but which I said it on medium nowadays, because on a wide-angle, you got so much stuff to try to watch. You
right.
know, you can only really focus in on one part of the screen, you know, so it gets to be a little tedious.
What's that? What were we saying, Johnny?
I was going to say it's a short focal-length lens, too, so... Things very big when you get that wide angle thing going on too. It's, you know, like any kind of zoom setup. So not only do you have more to look at, it's smaller and harder to figure out what you're looking at too. So
what you should do is give each team member a copy of the video of what you took. And you say, okay, Mojo, I'm going to watch the far left side. Johnny Pine Martin's going to watch the middle right side. Rusty's going to watch you know what I'm saying? Each person
kind of do that just staring at the monitor. We each assign somebody kind of a quadrant.
Right.
I know one time Mojo and I had it just split in half, and we're sitting there watching a video, and Rusty comes walking by and goes, "What was that?" Score. She sees it. But fresh eyes.
Yeah.
You know, our eyes were
that's true.
Yeah, our eyes were hanging out of our skulls by then, you know, going, And she comes up and sees the little guy peeking out from behind a stump up in Mount Rainier area. So
that's very cool.
Yeah,
that's, I don't know. I think that might also kind of be a woman thing. I think they're good at seeing fine details.
Yeah. Or things you omitted doing.
Or that, yeah. That would be bad also. That would also get you caught up.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to mow the lawn. Oh, you saw that.
So has it gotten dark there yet? It's midnight here. It has to be dark.
No, it's getting, the sky's getting to be kind of a gray. It's lost the blue color, and the frogs are tuning up. But, let's see, consulting, it's like 9.
I can still see, I can still see a couple hundred feet into the woods right now.
Wow.
Yeah, we got about a half hour to go till dark. We're pretty far north, so it's that, kind of a cheesy version of that Midnight Sun Alaska thing. Seattle's the largest city of any consequence in the continental U.S., I mean the most north city of any consequential size in the continental U.S., so... Even though we're away from Seattle, we're still pretty far north.
I was about to ask how far away you are from Seattle.
120 miles south, I guess, from Seattle.
Gotcha. So what's on the menu for tonight? What are you guys going to do when you get off the phone with me?
I figured we'd hang out by the campfire until it got closer to dark and then do some wood knocking. And see if we stirred anything up. And I'll have an audio recorder out by then.
Yeah, we're gonna test the motion recording capability of the DVR once it gets dark. Make sure the motion on the thermal trips it as well as the other camera. Well, I know it does it on the other camera. I actually tested that today when we were doing our field repairs or field modifications. I just want to make sure it actually works on the thermal input that actually activates during motion. We're going to test that out too. Well, since it's a function of the DVR and not the camera, so basically I would think it basically scans for changes in pixelation, something that's moving. So it's a function of the DVR and not the camera, so it shouldn't care what the picture is. So it shouldn't care whether it works as well with thermal as it...
Like grab a little coal out of your fire and take it with you and throw it through the frame and see if how small of a... I'm serious. See how small of a thing it takes to register it to start recording.
No, maybe we can do that. Yeah. So
you want to know if it's... Yeah. Like you might only get to see the top of a Squatch's head. You might not see the whole thing.
Yeah, I can see John and Mojo putting out a forest fire.
I'd be like, let me delete this interview.
I'm never listening to PK again.
Terrible advice. No, but something. Well, okay, heat up a rock with your hand.
It's amazing how sensitive it is. If you wood knock on a tree, you can see the change in temperature from where the bat hit the tree. It like warms the tree up spot.
That's cool.
I mean, it's very sensitive. The thermal itself is very sensitive. So
I don't know. I haven't been able to calibrate my little thermal I bought yet.
Did you get one of those new FLIR ones?
No, I got the Seek thermal that hooks into your cell phone.
Oh.
Yeah, I was going to get one of those.
It's actually pretty cool, but I haven't, like, you have to calibrate it on and do all kinds of things. Like, you have to decide whether it picks things up above or below a certain temperature and all this.
I've been thinking about getting that little Seek and just having a little dedicated Android tablet or something running it.
Would be awesome.
Yeah, because, even a 7-inch screen would give you a screen you could live with.
I have it on my cell phone, and it's I mean, the screen, it does a good job.
Did you get the extended range model?
No, I got the, I heard that the extended range one had a smaller frame of view. So I got the regular one.
See, I thought I would get the extended frame and then put it on something with a bigger screen to get back. Because I always get that. You know, I wish I had eyes like an eagle thing.
Yeah.
I thought I'd go for the more of the telephoto type thermal lens.
Well, I can tell you it's definitely not good for close-up.
Yeah.
You definitely want to be using it at some distance. 20 feet would be good.
For
lots of purposes, that's plenty good.
Yeah,
I mean, we're thinking from 50 to 100 yards.
Right. No, it's good at that range for sure.
Right. You can't see thermal through a 3-foot thick tree. We've already learned that one. So.
But if the thing touches the tree, then you can see it.
Right.
So what's up for tomorrow? You guys off to a new place or you're going to...
I was thinking I kind of was going to vote that we drop down the ridge and explore. We're up above a swamp, and I like swamps from a Squatchy standpoint.
Right.
Because nobody goes in swamps. People don't want to get wet and muddy, and Bigfoot doesn't get in trouble if he gets wet and muddy. So.
The mosquitoes also help people away.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to go down in there and poke around, and I figure we might find something. But we also put the word out that we're around, and then maybe somebody will come by looking at us tomorrow night. We'll get a return visit possibly tomorrow night. I mean, that's what we always hope. It's been our experience that the longer we're in an area, we get more activity later on in our stay. Or, you know, late night things or wood knocking or sounds or screams or whatever. Usually the first day, nothing much happens. It's kind of like everybody's got to find out that you're around and then go look at the funny guys from town.
Yeah, it's the middle of the week. It's a Tuesday, so there's not a lot of human activity out here. So after a while, you think they're going to get a little curious and want to come in and see what these jokers in the van are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some guy left a trash can with an eyeball in it on top of his van. Go look at it.
The R2-D2. Yeah, what the hell was that thing on top of it?
You know, Sasquatch watches Star Wars. They'll knock it.
Oh, yeah. They love Chewbacca.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're like our brother.
Yeah. You know, all the other people in that movie were stupid except him.
Well, I will let you guys go for the evening.
Tomorrow, I'll send you some pictures if anything comes up.
Okay. That sounds awesome. Feel free to call me back tonight if anything happens.
All right, sounds good, man.
Cool. Good talking to you.
Oh. Okay, take care, PK.
All right, see you later.
To the town of Our Free, who rode a stranger one fine day. Hardly spoke to folks around him, didn't have too much to say. No one dared to ask his business, no one dared to make a slip. The stranger there among them had a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. It was early in the morning when he rode into the town. He came riding from the south side, slowly looking all around. He's an outlaw, loose and running, came the whisper from each lip. And he's here to do some business with a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. In this town there lived an outlaw by the name of Texas Red. Many men had tried to take him, and that many men were dead. He was vicious and a killer, though a youth of 24. And the notches on his pistol numbered 1 in 19 more. 1 in 19 more. Now the stranger started talking, made it plain to folks around. Was an Arizona Ranger, wouldn't be too long in town. He came here to take an outlaw back alive or maybe dead. And he said it didn't matter, he was after Texas Red. After Texas Red. Wasn't long before the story was relayed to Texas Red. But the outlaw didn't worry, men that tried before were dead. 20 men had tried to take him, 20 men had made a slip. 21 would be the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. The morning passed so quickly, it was time for them to meet. It was 11:20 when they walked out in the street. Folks were watching from the windows, everybody held their breath. They knew this handsome ranger was about to meet his death. About to meet his death. There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the ranger is still talked about today. Texas Red had not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped. And the ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, big iron. When he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his head.